Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay. We're down 1,000 listeners.
Can't tell you anything.
It's Jungle Jim Jerome.
God.
And Rusty Cortinel coming at you again with another episode of The Suspendables. And we just found out we're down 1,000 listeners from last week.
Jimmy, I can't tell you anything. For the people who haven't heard this story, I got to tell it quick and then we'll start the show.
Absolutely.
Yep. During the Cortinel Celebrity Classic in Victoria, my good friend, and I'm good friends with the father, he was our team captain at men's captain at Victoria Golf Club, where they allowed us to host our charity event for mental health.
Which is a coup to start
and
off.
And it's the only charity event they let anyone have there. I mean, they have their own, I guess, inside, but in the club, but they don't let outside, you know, organizations. So he has a very thick English accent, and he was a major in the English army, I guess.
Right.
And his nickname was Major. And he came over and he's like, Jim, you can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do this. And I'm like, Oh, Jimmy, you were frothing. And I'm like, Jimmy, you can't. And so he introduced, so Major Petzing introduced Jim and everybody was having a great time. And he almost tripped running to the mic and he then roasted him for 5 minutes. And I'm like, I'm standing beside the Major and he goes, oh, he is kicking me in the balls, and I quite like it. It's a horrible English accent, but he's kicking me in the balls, and I quite like it. And his son, Jeremy, was pissed, but he got over
was
it.
Oh, was the son pissed? Yeah.
Oh, he was pissed.
I remember that. You said, don't do that. And
Yeah, whatever we, talk about, it's going to be on the air, you bastard.
I just mentioned to you,
we're down 1,000 listeners. Can you open the show with that?
I just remember looking at you because he said, ladies and gentlemen, here he is. Your master of ceremonies this afternoon, James Jerome. And I walked up into the mic. Oh, I just remember seeing it. And I went, well, thank you very much, Major. And you were like,
oh my God.
Russ and Jeff was laughing his head off. Anyway, he was a good ship, that guy.
Yeah, he was awesome. He passed away and just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And we loved him. But then I was just so paranoid about everything, the ongoings at the golf club. And Kid Rock showed up with a muscle shirt on and ripped jeans. Major was not happy.
No, he wasn't. Yeah. Anyway, though, God, those were the good old days.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, Rusty, happy Easter. We got a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about today. I purposely left you off the list. You know, usually
The
list you never read anyway. A bunch of stuff's going on. Baseball started up. The Masters is this week.
Ooh.
Yeah. Love the Masters.
Yeah.
The teams are starting to move around a little bit in the NHL. There would be 20 games left. But if you look at the schedule, so many guys have missed games because of COVID. And now COVID is very serious in Canada. There's a new strain, a variant from Brazil that is deadly serious.
Who the hell went to Brazil?
Yeah. Who did it?
Who went to Brazil and had fun?
Yeah. Anyway, so the Canucks, all their games this week were canceled. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how this is going to play out, Russ, how they're, I guess the season will go, what do you do? Edmonton missed a bunch of games in Montreal. And then now Vancouver has not been able to play. I guess they'll just have to keep adding days onto the end of the year while other teams sit, I guess.
And Vancouver's farm team's in the U.S., so those players would, if they called up 15 players or 10 players, whatever they needed, they'd have to quarantine for 7 days or 14 days, whatever it is. So another reason why Vancouver should get a farm team in Canada.
Yeah, there you go. There's 20 plus guys apparently.
Yeah,
who have a very serious cases of COVID with the Vancouver Canucks.
I'm buddies with Jordy Ben. He tested negative. I almost said you're the only guy on the team. So, but I didn't say anything. So he and his family they tested negative. So he's good.
We don't get too much into sort of politics or government or anything, and I guess hindsight's 20/20 when you look at this thing. And I know our producer there, Steve. I always thought he had said the right thing to do that. And Glennie Gretzky said this too. We were talking one day, going, "Here's what you have to do," and this was a long time ago, is just shut the world down for 3 weeks. You know, and of course they never did, and no one seems to be able to get ahead of this thing. So.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What would you have done, Russ, if you were the health department head?
I don't know because it's so...
Get some White Claws.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Drink away in your house for 3 weeks, God.
Yeah. Well, the sports world, like baseball started up. There's a, as you know, I'm doing this curling podcast.
Yeah.
By the way, it got picked up by Sportsnet, Russ, the curling podcast.
Good for you.
Yeah, it did. Got picked up with Kevin Martin. You. Yeah. Anyway, that curling is on. It's the world championships right now. So there's 14 teams from around the world, and they're pulling it off in the bubble in Calgary.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
great.
Kevin, who's from here, Kevin Martin, kind of the Wayne Gretzky of curling, he drove down to Calgary from here. He lives in Edmonton. It's about a 2.5-hour drive. They got really strict protocol. Like, once you get in your car, you're not allowed to stop anywhere along the way. You have to go right to the hotel that you're isolating in. They test about every 72 hours. Teams have to do it. They've got to stay in the bubble, and they've pulled it off. There's been some
That to me makes sense. Here's what doesn't make sense. You want to go to Hawaii. You got to get a negative test within 72 hours of your flight. Then you get on a flight with a bunch of people you don't know and you fly 6 hours in a plane. And then you go and you hand them your test. What did you do for 72 hours after you got a negative test? I mean, you could have went to a movie theater because movie theaters are open now. I mean,
and could there be a worse place? That, like,
I just don't get that. But that what you just told me, it's don't stop and you're going right to a place. You're trying to keep everybody safe, right, and not get sick. And you could stop in a coffee shop and pick it up from. That's how we get flus and colds, is just being around people. And that to me, I get that. I really do, because they're trying to pull something off and not have happen what happened to the Canucks and all the players getting diagnosed with the virus. So I'm trying to say that I do get certain things, but I don't the other stuff. Walking your dog in a park by yourself wearing a freaking mask. I mean, come on. No sense.
Right.
But I'm not a dog. I'm not a dog. How can you smoke with the mask on?
Shut up. Okay. I put a hole in it. Yeah.
Jesus.
What's really strange. They had, the golf tournament they had this past weekend at the Valero Texas Open, which Jordan Spieth won. They're allowing more fans to come in. I don't know what they're doing about the Masters, the Masters starts this week, but the Toronto Blue Jays baseball cranked up a few days ago, and the Blue Jays played their first series against the Yankees, and then they go down to Texas, which they started today as we record Tuesday, and the Texas Rangers, it's their home opener today, have allowed capacity. So it's, I mean, different strokes, I guess, for different folks. But anyway, Rusty, I got a bunch of stuff I want to ask you today. The trade deadline is coming up on the 12th. Will be a week. Well, our next show will be the day of the trade deadline. So I want to sort of, you were 17 years in the league.
16. And
16. Okay. It's a, it's charity day, Russ. I'll always give you an extra year. So you were around trade deadline.
If I missed the 17th year, just send those paychecks. Phone whoever I played for and tell them I never got paid for that 1 year.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. We got to fix up here. So anyway, Rusty, teams are starting to starting to jockey for position in the NHL. I'm loving it right now. I'm watching it. I don't know what it's like for you, but I kind of don't worry about things too much at the start of an NHL season. And then, but this thing's almost half over, right? It's supposed to be 56 games. And so now they're starting to jockey, and get serious and, so serious, I think that, I don't know if you saw it, but, Connor McDavid in a game the other night gives the guy the full on blatant elbow to the head.
Oh, I know.
And they've got this deal. Okay. That the players union and the league decided on that there'll be fines. Okay. You've always said hit him in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
Okay? So here's what they did, Russ. It's maximum $5,000.
Jeez.
Okay. So that's what the fine is.
Wow.
For this thing. And I thought, well, Connor's, I guess they got to protect their stars a little bit. And,
but they have handed out suspensions. I don't understand that.
Why? Yeah, did you see the hit? Did you see?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it.
Suspendable, I would think, Russ.
He definitely threw the elbow at the head, yep. Which they're trying to get rid of. They're just trying to get rid of that in the game. And no, I get it. He's frustrated and he pissed off and he reacted, but still suspendable no matter what. He's a great player. And I just, you got to treat everybody the same. Doesn't matter what player's wearing, what jersey and what number.
Right.
And it's up to the committee to say, what do we give him? What do we not give him? And $5,000, I just don't understand how a headshot elbow is $5,000. And, the Oiler fans are pumped because they're not losing their best player. But, but it's, if you want to take that stuff out of the game, you got to just treat everybody the same, in my opinion.
Does it set it back, Russ? Like
they lose credibility.
Yeah, it's like if you're going to have these hard, fast rules about concussions, and then when you see that one,
yeah,
that you don't, you got to give the guy a couple games and make a statement.
Yeah, because if he was the tough player on the team, they would have said he was headhunting and he was trying to hurt him.
Right.
Oh, he's not that kind of player. He didn't mean to. It's an accident. He's just not that type of player. Well, a headshot and an elbow is an elbow. It doesn't matter who gives it.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
You talked about a great story a few weeks back about being in the hotel room and the phone ringing. I think you were with Claude Lemieux.
Oh, that was for Team Canada, yeah.
Yeah, Team Canada.
One of us was getting cut.
And you answered and
no, they told Claude you. Answered. Claude answered. And Claude was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll tell him. And I'm like, oh, fuck, it's me. I'm done. I'm gone. And right. Then he gets up. He goes, well, have a great tournament. They cut me. You're staying. So him saying, I'll tell him, they just said, tell Russ he made the team. Right. Nice, eh? Nice. Beautiful. You're cutting the guy and then you tell the guy, yeah, you tell your roommate he's staying.
Yeah, I don't want to bother telling.
We don't want to phone back twice. We don't want to waste a dime.
What about trade deadline, Russ? So it's a week away. Walk us through that for the different situations for different players. What's it like? What's the atmosphere like around the locker room when it's cooking, percolating, boiling?
There's always somebody on the block. You hear it through the media or your agent or. Teams are calling and so the guys who know they haven't had a great season. The coach isn't playing them the way the ice time they should normally get, and they're kind of on the outside. So those guys are waiting for a trade. Like they think they know they're gone.
Right.
It's the ones that are playing really well and Ulf Dahlin, we traded Ulf Dahlin. He was Mike Modano's winger. They played unbelievable together and a 30-goal guy every single year. And boom, we traded him. And no one could believe it. Mike Modano couldn't. Nobody. It just came out of left field and he went to Washington. So those are the trades that are the ones you just don't expect are the shockers when your name's not mentioned and the team thinks they got to add something. And usually when you want to add something to your team that, you know, you got a good team and you want to add a certain player, usually you got to give up a really good player to get that person. So it's normally a player that's playing well and isn't expected to go.
Right. Is it always, Russ? I mean, there's some obvious stuff that goes on with trade deadline when teams, for example, when teams are in the hunt, right, are going to make the playoffs. Is that mostly what all those trades are about, Russ, at trade deadline?
So a rebuild, they're looking for prospects and draft picks. So they're going to trade away older players or good players that are maybe expensive, and they're going to add youth to their lineup or to their future. So, you know, they're selling expensive or older players. And then usually the team's going after good players like that, or, you know, older, mature guys who've won before, making a lot of money. Their teams are like, oh, let's trade away our first round pick for this guy and hope, you know, hopefully this will add to our lineup and we'll win. And you always see those big trades, and the problem teams have when they make these massive trades for really good players is that you got a really good team and you're moving along, and now that player needs the ice time. So somebody on your team is going to lose out. If you just trade for a draft pick, you know, you're not trading a player for a player. Mm-hmm. And when you add a player and don't subtract a player, somebody on that lineup of that winning team that they think can win the Stanley Cup or go a long way is going to be pissed because they're going to lose some ice time or not play at all.
Right.
So it sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. We've all seen big trades where they just were brutal. The team just never got back to where they were, and they paid a lot to get that person, and they didn't win.
Have you ever sat, Russ, at the draft table?
Well, the year I got drafted, it was in Montreal and I got drafted to Toronto, I sat at the table till we kind of hinted I should probably go back to my seat.
Go to another seat.
Yeah. Well, they have a phone. They have these phones at the table. And I just started.
So, sorry, set this up again.
So I get drafted.
Yeah.
I get drafted 7th overall in the first round to Toronto. I'm barely 18 years old, just turned 18. And they said, you can call your parents, and it's free. Like, it's, you know, you just dial the number. I went away to Notre Dame and I had to call collect to my mom. So they just said, yeah, just dial one and the number. And I'm like, okay, I'd never done that before. It was always zero. You know, I want to, I want to place a collect call to my mom. So I call my mom, wake her up. It's probably 6 in the morning, Victoria time. Because it's probably around 9 a.m. I get drafted or earlier. So I wake her up, tell her the news. And then I'm like, I got to call Notre Dame, my school, because they're in assembly right now. They sing O Canada, the Lord, and say the Lord's Prayer and have assembly before everyone goes to class in varsity. And all my teammates from the year before were there and my coach. So I'm like, this is great. So I call. And then they put me as part of the morning assembly, like they put the phone up to the mic. They're talking to me and I'm talking to the students and stuff. And so that call lasted while. And then I think I might've called my uncle or somebody. I started calling people because back in those days, you knew everybody's phone number, not like today where you have a cell phone, you just, you know, press their name and dials their number or whatever. So, I was calling people, and then finally Gord Stellick, who was the runner then, who eventually traded me when he became the
GM. Right.
He said, I think Russ, do you mind going back to the seat? You know, we got other guys getting picked and we so before their second round pick, I got told to go back to my seat. So,
right.
Anyways, I was at the table for a while.
Right. Is the GM's job, Russ? We sort of only know it as they're either good or they're not very good because they, you know what I mean, as a fan.
Yeah.
Walk us through that gig, Russ. It can't be fun, man.
It's a lot different today, I think, than it's changed a lot. Like they have somebody who's a cap guy, a negotiator. The contracts where the GM, when I played, did everything. He negotiated the contracts, made the trades. They have a scouting staff that they listen to and, mm-hmm. and they talk to their coaches. And they still do all that, but I don't know how many of the GMs today are involved on the financial side because there's so much going on with the salary cap and they call these guys cap experts and then they, mm-hmm. they'll negotiate with the general managers or with the agents and then they'll go to the GM and go, okay, this is what they want. What do you think? And then GM either can make that decision or he has to go to the owner or the president of the team. It just depends which team and how much power they have.
Right.
Because some GMs have a lot of power and then there's others that are the owner wants to know any decision on X amount of dollars because then they've got a financial commitment to a player for so many years and they want to hear about it. And then there's other owners that have given guys, you know, they got a salary cap and, you know, here's where I want you to be. And then, you know, if there's some big trade or deal or to keep a player and the GM feels like he needs to, he probably calls the owner and says, hey, this is how much it's going to cost us for this player. What do you think? But it just depends on the relationship with the owner and the GM.
Well, how about back in your day? Not only that, president, GM, and they'd be the coach too.
Yeah, there was. I think
Sather was the coach GM of the Oilers for a long time.
He was. And then I think Kevin Lowe might have been for a short period of time. Or did he move up? Did he tell us he moved up?
Well, he moved coaching up so quick, right? He went wham, wham, wham into the front office.
Yeah. Right. And then Bob Gainey was coach and GM in Dallas, Minnesota, when I was there.
Right.
Guy in Calgary was coach and GM. Anyways, there's been a few.
Brad Treliving is the GM in Calgary, and they just hired Daryl Sutter. Mm-hmm. And so Sutter came on. I think they won three in a row. Calgary's right in the hunt, by the way, right? The top four teams from each division goes to the playoffs. Calgary, there's seven or eight teams in each division, mm-hmm. and Calgary's a few points out of fourth. Sutter comes on, wins a few games, and then goes into the tank. And all they did during, I was watching one of the games, all they did was show Treliving every 2 minutes, you know, going, oh, got to be tough for the GM right now because their ass must be on the line, right?
You know, the GMs, they want those players to do well because they've signed them and put them in the, you know, drafted them. And then, you know, then they've got a coach who's playing a guy or not playing. Like there's some dynamics there when things are good, everybody's happy. But when things are sideways, it's tough on everyone. You know,
right.
coach has to win to keep his job. Same with the GM has to. There comes a point where the coach is like, okay, I'm going to play the guys I think because I'm going to lose my job if we lose. So it's interesting dynamics. But when things are good, things are really good. When things are bad, they're really shitty.
Yeah.
Stressful. Stressful. I don't know Brad. I know his parents really well. I know his dad and his stepmom really well.
Great guy. God, his dad's a hell of a guy.
Yeah.
Of course, he's the famous Shark Tank guy, Boston Pizza chain guy.
I got to tell you, though, you know, Sandy, Treliving, and Jim, they do a ton of work in Toronto for mental health. And she's an amazing lady. And they're just a great family. I like I said, I don't know Brad that well. In fact, I don't know if we might have met, but I can't really recall. But he sure looks like his dad now.
Right? God almighty, think.
When I see him, it's like crazy. Spitting image.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jim's a wonderful guy. They're huge. They've been big supporters of our mental health fundraiser in Victoria. They always give us money, even if they can't come. Now, Boston Pizza is big involved in our stuff. But anyways, I just had to throw that in there because Sandy's doing such great work in Toronto and across Canada.
And by the way, Rusty, I think you know that Jim Treliving started a league in Texas, a hockey league in Texas.
Yeah.
based on, and the I talked to him about it. I said, why would you ever do that? He said, well, I had the same idea that we run our restaurants. I thought we could run teams that way, mm-hmm. where we direct franchise. Them on everything.
You know? Franchise them.
Franchise them and all that stuff. And I don't know if it's still going or not, but apparently
I think
it was
that's
very
how
successful.
Brad got his, I think that's how he got his legs in hockey.
Got his feet wet.
He was running that for them, I think.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway. Yeah. So speaking of Daryl Sutter, Brad Tree Living Hiles, Daryl Sutter, Goudreau in Calgary's about to play his 500th game or
oh,
plays
gosh,
his 500th.
I saw that.
Plays his 500th. That's huge, you know?
Yeah.
And so they asked, now Daryl Sutter hasn't been there that long. Okay. Right. He's a freshie here, Rusty. Okay. Yeah. You would think you're kind of going around and patting everyone on the back. They asked Daryl Sutter, can we get some remark from you about one of your star players, Johnny Goudreau, getting his 500th game?
Actually, he said, what do you think about him about to play his 500th game?
Okay.
And he said, hopefully has more energy than his 499th.
I know Daryl. I've met him. You know, their family's all down in Red Deer, and they're all from Viking, Alberta. They're farmers. And he's just kind of the least fun I've ever been around in my life. Like, I don't know what kind of guy he's like.
He must be a great poker player because, man, he just doesn't give you any expressions. Like
nothing.
He would be awesome at the table. He wouldn't need the sunglasses, the hat.
Yeah, he'd be unbelievable.
You just look at a guy and go, at the poker table. Yeah. I got four aces, asshole. What do you got?
Were you okay with what he said, Russ? Like, if you're the...
I think that's what we expect from him. He's so honest and blunt. I mean, that's how he feels. You know, he didn't sugarcoat it. He didn't... Right. He's not a politician. He is who he is, and that's why they obviously hired him, because he's demanding, and he'll tell you when you're not playing well, and I've never played for him, but it doesn't matter which player it is, where some coaches are afraid to tell the stars, what they really think, because they rely on him. But man, he came out of the gate.
Right. I get the sense, Russ, that a hiring of Daryl Sutter to bring Daryl Sutter into your team as a coach, that say the GM is probably saying something like, you know what? Team's too soft. The party's over. Go find Daryl Sutter.
And it's interesting. Jeff Ward, when he got there, did a great job, and they were playing really well. And then obviously they weren't happy with what was going on, so they let him go. But
so what I was asking was, do you think you bring in a crusty guy like Daryl Sutter? Is it some guy's just exhausted going, okay, this team's fucking around too much. The party's over. Someone go get a guy like Daryl Sutter.
Yeah, they went for a hard-nosed, tough guy. Tough person. So that's obvious to me.
Right. And experience. I mean, Christ, the guy won he's a winner. Cups in L.A., right?
He's a winner.
Okay, Rusty, here's what I got for you as I go through my notes. Are you a baseball fan, by the way, Russ?
I played baseball growing up, and I don't watch a lot of baseball. I used to have a great gig in Toronto when I played for the Leafs. Ward Air, old airline.
I remember where I worked. Yeah, he's from
Edmonton.
They used
to give me two first-class tickets to come down to a game and watch the game with their clients, and then sign autographs. There's like a dozen people in the box, and
right,
come nice in gig. I show up in the second inning and leave in the sixth or seventh inning.
Right.
Great.
Right.
Great gig. So at Christmas, my family would all get first class tickets anywhere Ward Air flew. They loved
fabulous.
It. I had Dodger seats that Paris's mom had for years. We had four seats behind first base. I went to a few games. But we couldn't give the tickets away. It just was, there's so many games, and they just got more and more expensive. When we first started, when we took them over from her mom after she passed away, I think there were $4,300 for the year for four tickets, 20 rows up, 25 rows up above first base.
Yeah.
Great seats.
Not bad for 80 games.
Yeah, 4,300. The last year, probably 10 years ago, there were like the same seats were 25,000 bucks.
Holy Jesus.
And the guy called me, he goes, why are you canceling? You guys have had these seats in your family since 1980 or something like that. And I went, because of the price. I said, I try to get my friends to buy at cost, share the tickets, and they won't even buy 10 games because they're so expensive. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, I'm hearing a lot of that.
Right.
And then, you know, whatever, they're not cheaper, I'm sure. So whoever got them is paying for them.
How much in the city of Los Angeles, Russ, how far back in a seat is the hockey to the baseball?
I'll tell you, the games I've been to, they're pretty much sold out. The Kings. You know, I think
still,
yeah. I don't. I mean, I haven't been in since COVID hit, but you know, it's a popular ticket. It really is, and they tie them to the Lakers too. So some people have to buy their tickets to get.
Oh, there's a good idea.
Yeah, and then it's up to them to get rid of them. So you know, you can get tickets, but pretty much every game is full that I've ever been to.
Right. I remember when Gretz went there, he said it was just, I mean, he totally can change the whole fabric of the, you know, hockey in LA when he got traded there. And he was saying, Russ, back in the day, people weren't that interested in hockey or a lot of people who were aware that we had a team, but knew nothing about hockey. They thought the fighting was fake.
Yeah.
They thought it was like wrestling, you know, and then that all changed when Gretz got there. But anyway.
Before Gretz got there, there's like 4,500 people in the stands. It was a joke.
Right. And then whammo, whammo.
And then they traded for him and it was sold out. It was the hottest ticket in town. It was unbelievable. Sure. It was so much fun to play there.
And the celebrity watching was great.
Oh, my God. That games, in man. Warm-up, you'd just be skating around. And when you're on the bench, you're trying to, like, oh, look over there. There's Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell.
I went with Glennie when L.A. was playing Edmonton. And then they had to go back down to L.A. after Edmonton won, or after the Kings won here in Edmonton. And typical Gretz, right? He sent a couple of airline tickets the next morning. Glennie and I, we called it Glenn and Jim's Excellent Adventure.
Jeez.
And we went down there. And I got flicked by Tony Danza. We were at the Forum Club. Uh-huh. Right, the famous folks, the Forum Club is the place, right, Rusty, to go to before the game and after, I think. And during periods, everyone shows up there and it's the who's who, you know. And when I was there, there was Alex Trebek was there that day and a bunch of other guys, including Tony Danza. And Glennie and I were sitting there having a few. And I said, my sister's a fan of Who's the Boss was the great sort of corny sitcom that he did for many years and with Judith Light. And I said, I got to go get his autograph. And I walked over there and I didn't interrupt, you know, and he looked at me and said, what's up? You know, and I said, I just want to get your autograph. And he slapped me in the side of the face.
Yeah.
Like just not like criminally, you know, he just like, in other words, fuck off.
Yeah.
He said, if I sign one for you, I got to sign one for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And I came back to the table and Glenn went, you got flicked. You got flicked. Not only did you got flicked by Tony Danza. Like,
that's funny.
Anyway. Yeah,
I got to know Tony. That's how I ended up in LA is I met Tony's assistant and she, Tamara Holmes, she's passed away. Mm-hmm. Great lady. And anyway, I would go visit her. I'd go to the show. I went to Tony's for dinner. He came to her. I think they came to our wedding.
He seemed like a nice guy.
He's a really tough Italian New Yorker. So, you know, like I enjoyed him, but he
boxer,
was
right.
Is yeah. Boxer, but he's a tough guy. He's tough. And we used to go to his beach house on the weekends and he'd have great barbecues and stuff. We'd play volleyball and he's, you know, I can play sports obviously because I'm a professional athlete, but he wanted to be a professional athlete, you know, like, so he'd go, let's go. Like we've had a couple beers. We're hanging out and then I'm just chilling at his place. And there's all these people from Hollywood at his house in Malibu. Right. I'm just loving it. Yeah. Sunday chill. He goes, let's go take on the neighbors in volleyball. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like I haven't played volleyball since, you know,
right.
You know, elementary school, but
grade four.
Yeah. So I'm okay. Let's go play. How hard could it be?
Right.
Well, it turns into freaking World War III. Like he's pissed because we're down a couple points. I'm like, I got to pick up my game or I'm never coming back here. So I start freaking diving and he's like, that's it. I got my ace now. He's in, he woke up and then we win and he's so fired up. We played him. No. Now we got to play the other neighbor. And I'm like, what? Now I'm starting to sweat. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah.
We played a couple games, but I stopped playing. I went back to the house. I was getting a little thirsty. Mm-hmm. And he was pissed that he's like got me there and other people, there's six of us and we're winning. And he was pissed that I left after like an hour and a half of playing volleyball.
Funny.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Very competitive. Very. He's 70 years old and he's living back in New York. And my wife heard him on a podcast and he just sounded great. She said he's got just loving life and he's fitter. You know, he's always been really fit.
I bet. Yeah, I bet.
He doesn't box anymore, but he does all the boxing training, but he doesn't actually get in the ring and take a punch like he used to.
Hitting the bag and everything, hitting the heavy bag.
Yeah.
That's cool. You must
have a million. It's funny you brought him up.
You must have a million stories. And what happened after was the Kings, of course, win that game in game seven, and we're down in the locker room, and it's just a shit show, right?
And
in fact, it was so crazy that Wayne had to sit in a separate room inside the locker room with the press.
I think that was the Lakers locker room next door.
Wherever it was. Yeah. And I remember it was just like mayhem, you know, and Glenn and I got in, and then we went into this room. It was just Wayne who said, okay, I need 10 minutes here before for the shit show that's going to happen, right, with the media. And Oral Hershiser was in there, and me and Glenn, and there was a security guy on that room.
Yeah.
Like inside the dressing room.
Yeah.
And then who showed up was Tony Danza.
No
to
way.
Get in.
Yeah.
And he's talking to the security guard, and I said, I'll handle this, right?
No.
I did.
So I walked over. Payback's a bitch.
I tapped him on the side of the face. I said, hey. If we let you in, we got to let everybody in.
You didn't.
Oh, fucking right. I did.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
I did.
And what did he say?
Well, I thought I showed him and he laughed his head off and then just slipped under the arm of the security guy and came in. So we hung out for a bit. But anyway, that was my Tony Danza.
Oh, my God. That is so good.
True story, man. Yeah, true story.
That is so good. It's
supposed to be in a book somewhere, but I haven't read it yet. By the way, show 99 coming up. This is show 95.
Woo.
96, 97, 98. So in a month from now, stay tuned and we'll you try and figure out who we're going to have on for the 99 show. Rusty, I found a list today. By the way, Russ, speaking of COVID, I got a question for you. When a player gets sick, Russ, like gets the flu on a hockey team or starts to get sick, what do they do? They must fucking freak out.
You get your own room on the road.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, if a guy gets sick, they usually put him in. Well, when I played, we shared a room. Now I think they all get their own rooms.
Right.
If they've played, I think 400 games, they get their own room. But if somebody got sick on the road, they usually separated them and put them in separate rooms. But you know, the guys played through colds, and if you were sick, like you know, vomiting sick or coming out the other end, then you weren't playing. But most guys pretty much played through colds and flu, coughs. Yeah. As long as they could hold the body fluids down, they were playing.
Go barf and get back on the bench.
Yep. Well, you didn't want to give up your spot, right? You just never wanted to, take a night off.
Good point.
Let somebody else in your position. At least that's the way I felt. I was like, I remember one year I had really bad bronchitis. I think I was coughing like crazy. It was like, and they were like, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And sure enough, like during the game, the cold air, maybe, I don't know what it was. I felt good during the game, but God, I had a wicked cough. And then a couple, I missed when I was younger. I had some, I remember being real sick a couple times, just run down. I was not very big.
Right.
And, And I didn't, you know, I didn't weigh a lot when I first started playing. And I, when I got sick, when I was younger, it just beat the crap out of me. But as I got older and a little heavier, I could fight off the bugs.
Could. Top 25, is a survey, a poll that I saw put out, an opinion. I don't know how they measure these, the 25 greatest players in the NHL to play hockey.
I'll go, Gretzky.
Yep.
Or Howe, Hall, Esposito, Phil Esposito.
Just calm down. Calm down. Yep. Okay.
Messier.
Yep. You haven't missed yet, by the way.
Sid Crosby.
Yes.
Ovechkin.
Yes. You're bang on here. You haven't missed.
Brodeur.
Yes. Good one. Yeah.
Larry Robinson.
Larry Robinson, I'm surprised, not on the list of the top 25. But that's the first one you've missed in 3, 6, 9.
Now I wanted to rattle them off. I was trying to rattle them off as fast as I could.
Well, think back to your top 3 or 4 again.
Yeah.
Gretzky, Howe, Orr. You're missing a guy, and you played at the same time he played.
Curry?
Nope.
No way. Yeah,
it's going to be so obvious. You're going to say, fuck, of course. Mario.
Mario Lemieux, of course.
Mario Lemieux. Okay, so.
Marcel Dion, did he make that?
Dion did not make the list.
Yeah.
No. But your very good friend was the 25th guy. You played with him in Dallas.
Mike Modano?
Yes.
Top 25.
Yeah, he's the 25th guy.
Wow, that's an honor for Mike. That's a big honor.
I'll leave out some of the old guys from not our era. Like they got like Howie Morenz is in there, Eddie Shore, Stan Mikita, Doug Harvey. We'll leave these guys off. I think you mentioned Ray Bourque.
I didn't. I said don't think I said Ray Bourque.
There's another goalie. You mean Brodeur, and there's another goalie.
Is it Patrick Waugh?
Yes, it is. Fuck, you're rolling here. Okay, so we'll leave out those old guys. Guy Lafleur, was...
The Flower.
John Béliveau was in there. And, of course, the greatest Montreal Canadian, the Rocket.
God, he was a nice guy. I got to talk to him a few times. John Béliveau? Yeah, in Montreal. And he just had this aura of him, around him. Like, he didn't seem like a hockey player, but then you look close to his face and he had the scars like we all do. But he just seemed like a... Like, he would have been an unbelievable prime minister, you know, because
so or governor general or senator.
Yeah, something just so well spoken and such a nice man and calm. And yeah, really, I met some great guys there.
I bet you elbowed each other, Russ, when he walked in the room. Everyone would go, fuck, it's Jean Béliveau.
Yeah, he was special. He was really special. Always wore a suit and tie, you know,
big respect for the Molson family too. He had, right.
They kept boy. Him
on. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know this, but, he survived, longer than he was supposed to. There was something like his saliva glands stopped working.
Oh no.
And he couldn't, I'm not being funny here, folks. He couldn't produce saliva, and yet the guy still made public appearances and stuff and somehow did this. Like he was tough as nails, apparently.
Yeah.
Too. Okay, I'll give you some hints. There's only 1, 2, 3 guys left. That I'll give you a hint.
Did Barry make it? Probably not.
No, he didn't. The one guy had 9. Even Gretz didn't have this. The one guy had 9 50-goal seasons.
Oh, I played against him. Brian Trottier's winger.
Yes.
French-Canadian.
French guy. Yep.
What the hell? What number do you wear? God, we don't talk about him a lot. And he was, and you know what? He was great defensively too.
Mike Bossy. So you're talking about.
Sorry. Yeah. Mike Bossy. Yeah. I got to play against
950 goal season.
I know. I met Dennis Potvin and I played against Denny, and then he all of a sudden retired, and we met at the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver. and we were working for Hockey Canada, we were in the Hockey Canada house for 4 nights having right. beer with all their corporate sponsors and fans. And it was just awesome because I got to hang out with him. And then I set him up in Victoria for an extended vacation. And he and my friends who own restaurants and bars just totally took care of him, dialed him in, and he had the best time ever. And great storyteller. So I said, why, you know, you retired. And he goes, yeah, I only scored 19 goals. I thought I was, my career was over. I'm like, 19 goals as a defenseman. And he felt like that was it. And Bossy was kind of similar. Like he was still playing great and he retired young. Like he, did you say he only played 10 years?
No, I'm saying he had 950 goals. Yeah,
but I think he didn't play a long time.
Got drafted in 77 and he played for 10. You're right, Russ. He only played 10 years.
He was a classy player too, super strong. Him and Flower just, you know, they're such beautiful players, but you didn't, they were strong, man. Forearms on those guys.
Right.
Phenomenal.
Okay, there's two other guys, Russ, that you would have played at the same time as them. You'd mentioned Mario. That'll be your hint about the guy you're missing. You mentioned Mario Lemieux with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't think you mentioned this guy.
And he played for Pittsburgh?
He sure did. Yeah. And then Washington. And
oh,
then
Paul Coffey. No?
No. Is Coffey's Coffey on here. No, he
oh,
isn't.
My God. That's a joke.
Okay. It's a bad poll right now.
Yeah.
Jaromir Jagr is who I'm talking about.
Oh, Yags. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Steve Yzerman was on the list, too.
Oh, really?
Good. So there's probably so many guys. When you bring up names that aren't on there, I'm going, yeah, the guy.
Well, Paul Coffey's phenomenal.
How can you not be on there? Yeah.
Guys.
And you're not on there, Russ.
Yeah. Right,
you didn't make the top 100 either, right? No. Of the great hockey players, you should.
I barely made the top 100 for Leafs and Canucks.
Come on, you did.
I did. I was like 99th in the Leafs top 100.
Yeah, that's because they're all so old fashioned, and they want to name all their old players.
Probably not. I wouldn't make it anymore if they redo it because they've had all these good players in the last few years.
Could be their year. Leaf fans, hang in there. Rusty, very good, man. Another good show in the books. Thank you. This is fun, as usual. We're working on a couple of guests. I've reached out to Glenn Anderson. We haven't had anyone stiff us yet. On it. And then, of course, show 99, we're going to bring the great one on.
Said he'd do it.
Ray Ferraro, let's get him. Yep.
Ray would be good. Ray and I roomed together my last 2 years in LA, so he's got some good stories.
Oh, beautiful.
And he and I would do this routine on the bus on the road after every game we won. And oh my God.
Well, let's hear it before we go.
So Ray, as you know, when he did make the playoffs, he would go on as one of the color guys, commentators in the playoffs. And now it's what he does. He's been doing since he retired.
Right.
Full time. And so we would tease him as, you know, you're media, not a hockey player or whatever. And so I would hold up I would fake like I had a mic and I would go, he would pretend to be booze can.
You're kidding me.
No, on the bus, like with the GM and the coaches. And so I would start on the right-hand side of the bus and I'd go all the way back the right-hand side and I'd go back. There was a bunch of guys at the very back and then all the way down the left-hand side. And we go, so booze can, what did you think of, Rob Blake tonight?
Oh, fantastic.
And then
what an
he
idea.
Would, oh, if booze can would go into this, Ray can do voices and he'd do booze can to a T and he'd go, yeah. Oh, nah, we $5.5 fucking million dollars. And he would just,
oh no.
Oh my God. And so he would beat up everybody. Right. And then the guys you probably shouldn't that night if they didn't play that well, he'd just say, you know, you didn't get a lot of ice time tonight.
He was good to them. Right.
And then we'd get to the coach and I go, so booze cat, what did you think about Larry Robinson tonight? He goes, that's all folks. The interview's over.
And Larry'd be a great guy.
Everybody. I mean, we'd have the whole bus fucking laughing because, like, Sean McKenna was 6'8" on our team.
Right.
And Sean wasn't the greatest player in the world. Great guy. And he wasn't that tough, but you know, he's a big guy. So he, other tough guys wanted to fight him anyways. So Sean did his best out there, but I go, Boozcan, what do you think of Sean McKenna? And he go, he can dunk and he can jump.
Oh, that's so funny. I would never think that of Ray Ferraro.
Oh,
I just thought
he's funny,
a
man. He's
a straight-laced guy.
Oh, yeah. He's witty and he can do the voices. And everybody knew Boozcan because the guy would walk in the room with the vodka in a crystal glass. Hammered. So everybody's like, you know, within 2 weeks, they're like, who's that guy? It was just a funny, funny little sidebar we would do after the games, and the guys loved it. And they
were getting ready for
They would say, like Glenn Murray would go, oh, talk about Yannick Perreault. Talk about Yannick Perreault. Like the guys loved Ray doing his bit. Like they would be wanting him to get to players faster. So they'd be
I never would have thought that. Isn't that great?
It was funny. They called him the little ball of hate. Like he was just he was so intense. He was my roommate. He was so funny. And I used to tease him about being short.
Yeah.
So I was the second shortest guy on the team. He was the shortest, and I would tease him nonstop about how short he was.
Perfect.
And he would freaking call me Kareem. Oh, okay, Kareem. Okay, Kareem. Like you're freaking tall. He's anyways, Ray's a good man. I texted him the other day, and he said he'd love to do the show.
Let's do it. We're going
to
set that
plus
up.
Plus, I'd love to hear him. Like, I'd love to hear what he, you know, has to say about the game and what he's been doing and how he enjoys it. And I mean, God, he's got great insight. He does a million games every year.
Okay, Rusty, let's put a big, what do they say? Put a big bow on this.
Put a bow on it.
Let's wrap it up. I forget what we talked about. It was good.
Hopefully we get those 1,000 listeners.
We got to get the listeners back. Okay. Like and share, folks. Drop us an email. Okay. The Suspendables. @yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you and check out my twalking videos. Okay. I don't think you saw the one, Russ, on this weekend where I talked about you and I wished you happy Easter.
You got to put it on Instagram.
No, I don't want to put it on Instagram
because I'm only on Instagram. I'm not on the other things.
Okay. I'll send them to you. Anyway, tell your friends about it. We're back each and every week with another episode of The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and of course, my favorite friend of all time who got me involved in this thing, and I love him to death. Happy Easter, Rusty. Russ Court.
Hey, and I want to end on this. My daughter, Allie, the oldest, just got selected as one of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit models for the year, this year.
Like in the magazine?
Yeah, big deal.
What?
Just got an, yeah, she, it just came out today. She got picked after.
It's not tier two or anything? It's the big.
Yeah, they picked 15 models, and she's one of them and signed a contract. And nobody knows who will be on the front cover. That's always after they take all the pictures, they decide. And whoever gets that is, you know, it's a huge, it's like see winning the Stanley Cup kind of thing. But
so she will be in the issue, though?
She'll be in the digital and I'm pretty sure in the magazine, but she signed a contract, she got picked, and they announced it today. So big news for Allie.
She should leave her parents. Way to go, Allie. Congratulations. Yeah. Proud of her. Proud of her as you will be too. So we'll watch for that. We're going to have to get her on as a guest.
Yeah.
Rusty, go back to doing what you're doing. The weather's nice here, Rusty. It's 45 degrees. I got to get outside, throw the shorts on. It's nice here.
Yeah, it's 81 here today.
Yeah, no, fuck off. We'll talk to you later, Rusty.
See you, pal.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.